new era of collegiate athletics is here. This is Husker Max Today. I'm Caleb Henry. That's Nick Handley with the sweetest hat you'll see all week. In 2020 and 2021, Nick, what was the phrase we could not stop hearing every time something happened? Unprecedented times.
Unprecedented times.
Unprecedented. It's unprecedented times.
Yep.
Well, if over the last 5 days you haven't heard a new era. It's a new era of collegiate athletics enough, buckle up for this summer because that's all you're going to hear over different milestones, including right now, is that house settlement has officially been approved. Some of it's already in action, including NIL dollars and those deals and where they have to get approved. July 1st will be another milestone. Then obviously, hopefully we get into late August and September and games are happening and none of this is actually a giant talking point. But right now it is, because it has a lot of implications for roster construction, for athletic department construction as well. First, really quick, here's the basics of this. There are multiple parts to this house settlement that has been multiple months in the making, because it had taken some time for the judge in California to come back and hear some more. So here's ultimately what happens. Former athletes over the last several years are going to get a share of $2.8 billion in back pay. That's the big part of the settlement. So in all of this, there were multiple cases that were settled. So $2.8 billion in back pay from lost name, image, likeness compensation. The one you're probably going to hear the most about is the revenue sharing. It's a cap of $20.5 million. I should put quotes around cap, because that doesn't mean that's all you're allowed for the student athletes to make, because they're still outside NIL dollars. But directly from the university, $20.5 million in this upcoming year. That's 22% of the average of certain power school revenues. They're expecting that to rise next year. So this will just be year one, $20.5 million. This is a 10-year deal. The other part in this is those roster limits. We had talked about how football was needing to chase 105. Are they going to get down to 105? What's that going to look like? Well, the judge, Claudia Wilkin, ultimately was swayed during arguments to grandfather in student athletes. So that was a big part that I know Matt Rhule had talked about, Troy Dannon had talked about, to talk about where that was for Nebraska. But for football, it will be a 105-man roster limit, but you can designate student-athletes to where you can go over that number. Those can be people who were promised a roster spot. So incoming freshmen, incoming transfers, those can be players who were going to be cut or even did get cut. There could have been guys who hit the portal, do not have a destination, but Nebraska can designate them so that wherever they end up, they don't count against their roster limit. So there's a lot of different moving pieces within all of this. And then also ultimately how that $20.5 million gets used. It's not just for direct monies to the student athletes. I think this part is going to get forgotten by some people, because this can include new scholarships. And Nick, in a little bit, we can get into where all of those new scholarships can potentially go, up to $2.5 million against that cap. But just as you've looked at this house settlement over the last few days and delved into it on Sports Nightly, just what have been your initial impressions?
Well, I think that the one area, and you're already hearing a lot of top-tier coaches talk about this since last Friday of, okay, this is where we are. And you're right. I mean, this is unprecedented. This is without question the biggest development really since the inception of the National Collegiate Athletic Association. I mean, you look at all of these different benchmarks that these milestones we will look back at to the just these moments in time that have completely changed and shaped the way that we now know college athletics. This is without question the biggest. But also, there's always going to be that school of thought of, you know, this is unrecognizable. This isn't what I used to grow up watching and enjoying. I don't like where college athletics is. I know there's going to be that section of people out there that say that. And then we get to Saturdays and there's games going on. And then all of a sudden you'll get back on board, and that's just how it goes. But this is the one part of college athletics in the off season that unfortunately we've been inundated with, whether it's conference realignment. And again, unrecognizable, right? Geography makes no sense when it comes to conference realignment, all those things. And that's where people are like, just get me to the season, please. My God, just get me to the season. I can't handle this conversation anymore. Well, now we've got the even bigger matter at hand of, okay, there is a revenue share and what all that means. But the thing that I've been hearing from coaches, and I think that's something that should be somewhat celebrated on top of just the student athletes with the leverage they have and the seat at the table that they have now in what has been an absolute money-making business, is also what drove, I'm sure, you, Caleb. I know it drove myself and so many other people mad, and I know it did for coaches, of the lack of guardrails that existed in name, image, likeness. Mm-hmm. Well, with this house settlement, this is going to provide, now you have the clearinghouse with name, image, likeness. There's going to be more accountability. It's going to create a little bit more of that visibility and transparency of what is going on with name, image, likeness, how legitimate are some of these deals that are going on, what the student athlete is actually being asked to do to earn said dollars, and are they actually upholding those obligations, all of that stuff. It becomes a much more transparent model, in my opinion, and I think that's what coaches are really banking on now. Now, with this house settlement, provides some type of guardrails and a little bit more strict regulation when it comes to the name, image, likeness part. And again, it was the Wild West. I mean, the peer recruiting that was going on, the recruiting of players that hadn't even entered their name in the transfer portal, all those things that had happened. You hope that now this provides some type of calm in the waters when it comes to that. Yes, there is going to be money coming up. So that's one of the big parts about the house settlement, at least as of Friday, that struck me. The other part, though, is how many more lawsuits are going to be coming from this? Because we're just now scratching the surface of amateurism versus employees versus professional. And we know that the old amateurism model, that is far gone. Okay, we know that. These student athletes, how much closer are they to wanting that protection of being an actual university employee as opposed to just a student athlete that is reaping the new benefits that you get on top of a scholarship, but also the compensation that comes with this? And I think there are a lot of lawyers out there that are already weighing in on this, that they expect key parts of this settlement to have a barrage of lawsuits. We're talking about the salary cap that you just talked about, Caleb, that being negotiated. And then, of course, the College Sports Commission, their attempts to be able to squash and stifle deals between athletes and third parties, which could be a target of future antitrust challenges as well. So you have best way to put it is a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel on one end of it. Mm-hmm. But then on the second part of it, you're like, okay, are we just now starting what we felt maybe for a moment? Okay, finally, we've got a little bit of clarity. Things are going to kind of even out a little bit as far as the Wild West, and there'll be some regulations. But are we going to start to see even more lawsuits of, well, I don't know, how do you justify that salary cap right there? Okay, how are we going to be able to handle negotiations and decide, you know, who provides the payments? Again, Title IX, we haven't even got to as well. Yes. I think there's going to be lawsuits for that as well. So I think with this now being official, being signed by Judge Wilkin, now I think it does lead itself to many more legal challenges that are going to be coming in the near future. And if we think this is the final look of the model that the student athletes will be against, I think you're sorely mistaken.
Well, and a big reason why this is likely to not be the final model is because there is no organized group of student athletes that are ultimately agreeing to this. Now, they did have to opt in to receive said back pay. That's former student athletes. But going forward, that freshman in high school right now has had no voice and what college athletics is going to look like for them, what NIL is going to look like, revenue sharing, roster limits. There is not, in the same way that you have the NFL Players Association going to the table with the NFL owners and saying, this is what we're going to bargain. This is where we want our collective bargaining to be. You don't have that right now at the collegiate level. Title IX, I'm glad you got to it because I was going to bring it up too, is I expect that to be one of the first challenges in this, because most universities, as we discussed back when I think like Texas Tech put out their intended use of their percentages on how they were going to use the House settlement, most universities are going to use around 85-90% of that $20.5 million on football and men's basketball. What does that mean for Title IX? Does Title IX exist in this area? Does Title IX exist at all if the Department of Education goes away? That's its own conversation. But in this aspect, for me, and as I've told some people, I expect somebody to find something regarding Title IX to say it doesn't matter in this instance. Like I don't fully expect Title IX to come into the equation for the revenue sharing, but that won't stop it from being a lawsuit. That won't stop it from being discussed. Now, the other thing you that we've both talked about, that NIL Go, the clearinghouse.
Yes.
So any deals, $600 or more, have to get approved. If they don't get approved, buckle up for more lawsuits. Mm-hmm. Like how quickly is that going to be just more of the same? Because the new College Sports Commission, which is then going, and then it's, they hire out to Deloitte the NIL Go, the clearinghouse. How quickly is that new enforcement arm that's replacing the NCAA going to just get more of the same? Like I don't see the way things have gone that you just slap a new name on something that it's, oh, the NCAA is taking a bunch of losses. Now you have the College Sports Commission. Nick, are you we're both expecting them to just take a bunch of losses right now, right?
Absolutely. And this is the one thing that we've learned going all the way back to the O'Bannon settlement. And that was the courts are massively, and I don't even think it's even close to saying somewhat, it's massively in favor of the student athlete. And so this is an area where you have a lot of smart people that have law degrees teaming up with student athletes that, dare I say the word exploitation, feel like they've been exploited, that they're taking these matters to a courtroom and they're getting favorable rulings. And the NCAA, you're right. I mean, they continue to take loss after loss. And you know, and this isn't anything new because it's been going on the last couple of years, especially since name, image, likeness has been a big part of this discussion. But the NCAA really trying to lobby lawmakers into signing certain reforms into law. And this goes back to, I think, what I was just talking about when it comes to employees, of making sure that, I mean, if you're Charlie Baker right now, the president of the NCAA, and you're trying to avoid that next step, which seems like it's a lot closer. Remember Caleb, when Kane Coulter and Northwestern, some of the Northwestern players were talking about unionizing, and we thought, oh my gosh, okay, buddy, good luck with that. That's a cute idea and concept, but that will never happen. We are a lot closer to that being a reality than it not. And so
I think they would have more success if they tried that today.
Absolutely, they would. Absolutely, with all of the momentum. And again, talking about the leverage the student athlete now has in 2025 compared to what they even had in 2020 or 2015 is remarkable. But if you're looking to what I think is a good approach by the NCAA, and again, I'm not saying it's going to work, you really need to hammer home to Congress, to lawmakers, when it does come to, if this is going to stop short of becoming employees of the university, student athletes becoming employees and having that one exemption of antitrust, you've got to be able to sign this in law. I mean, in my opinion, that's the only way that we don't go down that road. It just seems like all the momentum is taking us to where student athletes are going to end up being employees. And then we're talking about all of the benefits that come on top of being paid and being able to negotiate those terms. But if the NCAA is able to get, and I agree with you, going to be a lot of L's, but able to get one win where they're successfully able to team up with lawmakers and Congress and have that written into law, that would be the ultimate win for the NCAA. And I think that that's one that they really need to hitch their wagon on, because that it just from that standpoint, that's the win that they need. Everything else you can sort out and you can provide, again, talking about the guardrails with name, image, likeness, and being able to maybe kind of accept and take your medicine on some of the other lawsuits that are inevitable. I think the biggest win they need is to have lawmakers be able to sign it into law, Congress sign it into law, that are still keeping student athletes from being actual university employees.
Teaming up with Washington is something that's been going on for a while. NCAA's mm-hmm. been trying to, hey, lawmakers, we keep losing in the courts. You guys handle this for us. That hasn't right. worked. But there is a bill. There's multiple bills, multiple hearings on collegiate athletics set for this week and in the future. But there is a bill floating around as well to make the terms of the House settlement law. So all of that is going on in Washington right now. A lot's going on in Washington right now. We'll see how big of a priority collegiate athletics becomes. On the $20.5 million itself, it's going to be interesting to see how every university decides to utilize this, because you can up to $2.5 million against that cap utilize it to create new scholarships. And I know there have been some school, I think there was a school in Texas, I can't remember if it was Texas or Texas A&M, but said they are going to fully fund all of the scholarships available.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a lot, guys. That's a lot, because you take football, for instance, that's 20 new scholarships. But that's not even your biggest change, because baseball, a sport where you had to split up scholarships, it wasn't a full participation sport where one person received one full scholarship. You could receive a third of a scholarship. You could receive a fifth of a scholarship. That's just the way it worked. If you got a full scholarship in a sport like baseball or track and field, you were the bee's knees, buddy. They were investing heavily in you.
Yeah.
But baseball is going from 11.7 to 34. So, for instance, the average scholarship is priced at about $15,000. If we take that to $20,000 and you fully fund that sport, you're paying an additional $446,000. Now, that starts to come out of your cap. That's money you can't use to just directly pay players. And that's 22.3 additional for baseball. If you do men's gymnastics, 13.7, women's gymnastics, 8. The soccer program, which has been successful here at Nebraska, doubles from 14 to 28. Softball goes up 13 after being at 12. Track and field on the men's side goes up 35.4. Wrestling goes up 20 from 10 to 30. And you see this across the board. And I've got all of those numbers in a story at HuskerMax.com and Nebraska Cornhuskers on SI. And I'll link it underneath this YouTube video as well. But when you look at those numbers and you say you can use some of this money to fund more scholarships, well, that's going to ultimately take away from that money you can use elsewhere. So I'm curious for Nebraska. And I should have added it up, what the entirety of fully funding all of these sports would do. And maybe I'll do that while you're talking here in a second. But that can come out of those dollars. But also, that feels like you're reaching out to the Olympic sports. That feels like you're aiding those in a way that, say, for women's soccer, where it's doubling, you were trying to stretch those scholarships around.
Yeah.
And now you're like, oh, you have double, or softball, you have double. And it's like, you made a super regional. Okay.
Yep.
That feels like, okay, no, you're not giving an extra $50,000 to every player on the roster in direct cash. But if everyone on the roster is now under scholarship, that feels pretty good too.
Well, I think, and I'm not sure if this is exactly where you were going when you talked about, you brought up the softball example too, but I think for a lot of the non-revenue, at least the non-traditional revenue generating sports,
mm-hmm.
would it make sense that there's some type of incentivizing going on where in year one, we're going to have X amount of extra scholarships available. If you meet a certain benchmark, whether that's postseason appearance, certain finish in the Big Ten, Super Regional, College World Series, whatever it might be, we will double that number the following year. And, you know, so I do wonder if there's a creativity that's going to come with this and trying to incentivize some of the other non-revenue generating sports. And we know that even with, and this is where Nebraska, I think, is unique, the so-called, again, I'll quote, non-revenue generating sports doesn't mean there's a lack of interest when it comes to the fan base, when it comes to attendance. We saw that in softball and baseball. Okay, if you put those two teams in high leverage games, and they're gonna get see a lot of crowd. Okay, we know when Nebraska baseball is playing great, how many people love the direction. When it's not looking good, how many people want to see changes? Okay, people care. You know, the bottom line is people care about almost every sport you can think of that Nebraska competes and has shown the ability to compete at a high level. So is there some type of incentivizing to where, say, hey, let's give you three extra scholarships this year? And I think you also want to gauge what your peers within the conference are doing, because this is not going to be a situation, and I'll use the baseball example here. This is not going to be a situation where Nebraska, and for fans that think this needs to be it, you need to knock this off. Of, well, the SEC is doing this for their baseball programs, that's what Nebraska needs to do. No, stop that. You have to stop that, okay? You need, first and foremost, to be competitive within your own conference and doing similar things that the top teams in your conference in that sport are doing when it comes to additional scholarships. Okay, so let's not try to play the arms race, at least right now, of what the SEC and the ACC are doing with that particular sport and how many scholarships are available. It's once you show the ability that you are not only on par with the very top in your conference, but maybe you go an extra step or two, then you can see what that is doing to your overall national brand. What type of recruiting? Have you seen an uptick in recruiting? Have you been able to expand your reach and the types of recruits you're getting in? Are you starting to see a team that is now looking to be one of the better teams in the Big Ten to now one of the teams that's a perennial top 25 team and is in the regional host discussion more times than they're not? If that's the case, okay, now we start to think outside of just the Big Ten scope of how things are going, and you start to compare yourself to the top 25 as opposed to the conference itself. But right now, first and foremost, and to your point, Caleb, of, okay, whatever you put into those sports, you're bringing away from your top revenue generating sports, which, again, we know where the majority of this money is going to go. You got to make sure that it's worth it. You got to make sure that's wise spending when it comes to that. And all of these coaches understand that. I think every one of these coaches knows that there's going to be challenges, even though we could have unlimited scholarships. That's not the reality. And even the SEC and ACC, I would be shocked if they're going more than 25 fully guaranteed baseball scholarships. That's a lot of money to take away from. Still, I get it. SEC and ACC baseball are a big deal, but still SEC and ACC football are a bigger deal. ACC basketball, SEC basketball are still a bigger deal. So we got to keep that in mind as well.
So if you were to fully fund all of that, which, by the way, that would be for Nebraska athletics and the sports that Nebraska sponsors, about 250 full new scholarships.
Mm-hmm. At about $15,000 average.
Yeah, which is going to get you to $3.7 million. Now, out of that only 2.5 of that would come out of your cap. Mm-hmm. So here's where I'm at on this, because you're running that balancing act. If Nebraska just came out and said, we're going to fully fund all of our athletics, we're going to fully fund all of these, 2.5 is going to come out of that cap. So now you're only dealing with 18 in year one. And then the university or the athletic department is going to bite the other 1.2 million. Just on an average, if that's where the numbers come out to. Well, that opens up the full 20.5 next year in the number that becomes, because every time you add scholarships, that comes out of your cap. But once you have those scholarships, you have them. So it's a little bit of, do you bite the bullet on some of that funding in year one, so that when year two comes around, you have all of those scholarships in place and available for your athletics teams, but now you also have the full 20.5 to play with. It's going to be interesting to see how Troy Dannon and the athletic department decide to tackle that, to where do they decide in year one, we're going to just do $1 million in new scholarships? And like you said, incentivize some of the sports and say, hey, a little bit performance-based here, but if you meet these things, we will add three more scholarships to your program so that you're working with $1 million for the next few years on this can go towards new scholarships. If those success levels aren't met, then that goes into the pot of the full revenue sharing. They can play it out that way to where it happens over a few years, or you can just try to fully fund it right away and say, hey, in year one, we're taking a little bit of a hit on the overall dollars that can, let's face it, go to football and men's basketball. And hopefully there are some more dollars that go to, you know, your traditionally successful programs that we've seen in wrestling, volleyball, softball. Baseball's got three championships in the last 5 years. Men's track and field has the most Big Ten championships of anyone. Mm-hmm. Like those types of things. Soccer just made an Elite Eight run a couple years ago. Hopefully there's dollars that can find their way to those sports. But I'm not a student athlete on one of these teams, but as somebody who's observing the way these dollars are working, I'm not all going to throw a hissy fit if instead of sending $50,000 to $100,000 for every player, if instead they are getting more scholarships for their team, because in the long run, think about a lot of those student athletes on the track and field team, on the baseball team, to where they're working with right now a third of a scholarship, a half of a scholarship. Yeah. If all of a sudden more of those guys or all of the guys on the team are operating with full scholarships or close to full scholarships on how they want to fund it, to me, again, that's such a big trade-off that I would absolutely take that, because in the long run, just whatever you can do to avoid student loans is where we're at on that. But when you look at this, Nick, do you think Troy Dadden is going to push for just 1 year of let's fund it and get it out of the way? Or do you think he's going to go more the lines of what you were saying on incentivizing and maybe stretch it out over 5 years?
You bring up a really interesting point on if you just go all in, you bite the bullet on the first one, and now you have those scholarships, you can go forward the following year, and then you have that 20 and a half to work with, that pot to work with. Because in the grand scheme of it, it doesn't seem like it's that much money out of a decent-sized pool. And then you got to factor in the collective on top of that. Now there's going to be a little bit more regulation with that, but yeah, that's not a bad thing.
What does the collective even look like going forward?
And that's a huge part of it. Is it's not that all of a sudden this just wipes away any type of additional income that the student athletes can earn. Not only do they still have the opportunity to work through the collective, but what I think is also, as I mentioned earlier, what's good for, I think, all involved, including the student athletes, there's going to be a lot more clarity, a lot more transparency of how that money is doled out and what your responsibilities are to earn that type of money. But my gut tells me that it's still going to be the non-revenue generating sports, like the ball bat sports we were just talking about, track and field, soccer, that those sports are still going to get not the full allotment of scholarships that are now approved and now available. I think they're going to get, I would say, anywhere in the ballpark of 3 to 5 additional to start off with per,
which is a big deal, by the way. That is still a massive deal to take. Let's say men's track and field. That's the one that's closest to my heart because that's what I did in college. 12.6 is where they're at. If you take that, and let's just make it a round number at 16. Mm-hmm. So that would be an additional 3.4 scholarships. And you now have 3.4 scholarships to work with. You now have, 50,000+ in scholarship money to utilize. That's almost not, like, you look at the $20.5 million and you say $50,000 to $75,000. That feels like almost nothing. But for the individuals on that team, that now you could go to every single one of them and say you're getting a tenth of a scholarship bump if you're not to a full scholarship. That's a big deal when you're looking across your roster. And then if it's incentive based and you can try to get 3 to 5 the next year, that is a big deal to me.
Yeah, and I think that that's without knowing exactly how everyone else around you, and I'm not trying to say that Troy Dannon or any other athletic director is going to make decisions based upon what their peers are doing or what other athletic directors are doing.
I can tell you what UCLA is doing, because UCLA has already announced they will not be funding any additional scholarships in this first year. So they will be utilizing the entirety of the $20.5 million in pure revenue sharing to the student athletes, not in creating new scholarships, which is what we're talking about right now.
Right. And I think I think in more of a sense, what a lot of schools are going to do, that they're not going to fully put it into the scholarships, but they're going to have it there for the student athletes to be able to, what I think this was initially designed to do. And that is to give the student athlete, mainly football, a bigger piece of the pie because of all of the TV money that we've seen. I mean, especially with the SEC and the Big Ten. I mean, those are absurd numbers, absurd in a good way. But I understand where the student athlete's saying, hey, we're putting our bodies on the line for entertainment purposes. We're seeing the type of money that's drawing in from not only a university standpoint, but also from a conference standpoint. We want a piece of that. That's where all this stemmed from. But it's been able now to benefit the entire student athlete, but to make sense for it to be at different levels. And so I do think it is an interesting concept, though, to just say, hey, let's go all in with the scholarship. Because here's the other part that we continue to forget, Caleb, when it comes to the non-revenue generating sports, the ones that don't have full guaranteed scholarships like football does and basketball does. It is that idea of, well, you're getting a scholarship, but there's less money to share to that sport for the student athlete as far as what he can get on top of just for his or her services. This is where we have forgotten the value of a scholarship. And when you don't have a full scholarship, to me, that is getting paid. To me, there is a good argument to be made that you are actually getting paid. That's a full scholarship. Like you said, you don't have to worry about student loans. And then you still have the opportunity to make additional money on your name, image, likeness. Mm-hmm. So there, all of those things still do exist. And we've seen the creativity on how to get all student athletes, not just football players or basketball players, but all student athletes in certain endorsements or in certain NIL deals that they can make pretty good money for a college student, pretty good money for a young adult.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. Like if you would have, I wanted to, and my sister wanted to when she was in college as well, but had we had the opportunity and my dad was still coaching high school track, we wanted to put on a series of track camps. Mm-hmm. And guess what? You do that over a couple of months and you do a camp a week and you just kind of go to all the little schools, all the little towns across central and western Nebraska, you're going to make a couple thousand dollars minimum each. So like that's how that could have worked 10, 15 years ago. You do that now, you're still looking at those types of dollars. So it is a big deal. And by the way, we talk about these expanding the scholarships for all of these teams. Nebraska football and all of the other football programs across the country, not just the Huskers, have the opportunity to add 20 scholarships. Mm-hmm. So that's minimum $300,000 that would have to come out of your pot already if you were to fully fund football. So if we're hearing from UCLA, they're going to stick with the 85 scholarships if that's the way that they're going to do that. So not fully fund 105. I'm very interested to see if maybe I'll send an email over. Maybe we'll try to get Troy Dannon and just hear, is there some way that you're looking at, even if it's not giving us a 75% is going to go to football, the next 15% is going to men's basketball, and we'll figure out the last 10%. Even if it's not that, even if it's just, are you looking at adding scholarships? Because that's a big deal in all of this on where that comes out of the full 20.5. And we also have to remember, if you bite the bullet, and this is where I'm at, because it's thinking long-term versus thinking year one short-term. To me, I like to plan long-term. And to me, if this was, I'm put in charge of all of it, guess what? We're fully funding all of these sports, because how big of a recruiting advantage is that going forward that you get to say, hey, baseball, we have 30 scholarships.
Yeah.
Like what you're looking at all of this stuff, and yeah, it's great to go play in the SEC and think of the number of Nebraska guys that we saw playing in the SEC or playing in regionals and super regionals elsewhere. That would have been nice to have them in Lincoln to say, hey, I get that that's nice, but also we have full scholarships. Like, that's a big deal when you're looking at a recruiting advantage. And then that cap, that 20.5, is supposed to increase about 4% every year going forward. So if you take the hit this first year and just say, we've got $18 million to play with, where it's direct monies to these student athletes, next year you're looking at $21 million or whatever it's supposed to be. You have the full allotment, and it's a bigger number because you've already gone and expanded all of your scholarships across the rest of the department.
And I think it comes back to the original purpose of what I believe the revenue share was created for, and that is to make sure that student athletes involved in the sport of football are getting what they feel should be a proper piece of the pie when it comes to the largest revenue generating sport in all of the NCAA. Because you make a very compelling case. It doesn't seem like it's this major chunk of that revenue that is going to fully fund scholarships that you now have available, and that it would behoove an entire athletic department to at least consider that and consider the possibilities of how that could create a major advantage, especially in the Olympic sports, or in this case, the non-revenue generating sports, at least traditional wise, that, like I said earlier, you can't start to put yourself on the same plane as what the SEC and ACC are doing in the ball bat sports. And again, I'll just use the baseball example again. But if you're able to do something like that and you feel fully that this is going to give you a major leg up in your conference, that nobody else in the conference is doing that, well, aren't you kind of accomplishing one of the major goals to take it a step further? And that is, let's do things as good as we can do within our own neighborhood, within our own conference. Let's be right there at the top of doing things when it comes to expanding opportunities scholarship-wise in that sport. And then if we see the fruits of that labor, then we take it to be competitive in the top 25, again, on how we're doing things and how many scholarships we're making available. If you go all in right away and you see the results match that, then I think that expedites the situation big time to where, okay, you already have that, and now you got a little bit bigger pool to work with when it comes to that following season. So it's definitely an interesting scenario that you lay out there, Caleb. I still think a lot of this is driven by football. I think you want the very last, every scratch of possible cent for football, because that's what's driving this thing, and that's what everybody, including Nebraska, understands. They've got to keep up with the Joneses if they're going to make this thing work. You got an exciting time with an expanded playoff that you have a chance to be a part of in the next several years if you play the game. And if that game is the majority of this is going into football, we got to make sure we're doing the exact same thing, or at least somehow make the numbers work. Now, I bring that up too, because what if football didn't fully fund 105 scholarships, but they were able to make it work to where they still had a lot of money available? You're still getting a lot for all of those student athletes. And then the NIL part of it too, where we know Nebraska is very healthy with their collective, the way that that thing is ran, that they can also offset maybe certain things that way too. As long as the numbers at the end of the day from what the student athlete is getting is comparable to the top 25 teams in college football, if you're doing that, then I think you're fine. I think that's how the game has to be played if Nebraska is taking this thing seriously in football, which we know that that's what they want to do. And why not? Because you have more opportunity to be in the end of the year tournament. So I think it all comes back to that. Are you doing everything with this new ability to draw in talent? Are you doing everything with that to make sure that football is as competitive as they possibly can be right now?
And one layer to this that we haven't mentioned, to me, if there was ever a year to go in all in on the scholarships, to say you bite that bullet and then you build a deeper war chest going forward, it would be year one. Not just because of the overall rev share going up each year, but because of the amount of deals that were done prior to this last week. All of those didn't have to go through a clearinghouse.
Right.
That's true. All of your NIL deals over $600 going forward, those do have to go through a clearinghouse. So if there was ever a year to say, hey, that money's kind of already there for football, it would be year one. It would be this year. And then you say, we're going to build out the rest of the athletic department, where we'll see when this College World Series is done and track and field and everything is all done, that where Nebraska sits in those final Director's Cup standings. Mm-hmm. But if you're looking at how do you raise the level of an entire athletic department, to me, it's year one, you say, yeah, we're doing this, and giving everyone a giant recruiting advantage on top of the recruiting advantages that we see in facilities and everything else that Nebraska has to offer. Let me ask you this in closing, Nick. Just kind of a cut and dry. We talked a lot about there's a lot of decisions that still need to be made on how the money is distributed. There's the potential for more lawsuits. We'll see what comes out of Washington. Just a cut and dry. Is this settlement good for Nebraska athletics when you look at where the Huskers are in the Big Ten and the bigger picture of the NCAA and chasing championships?
It is. I'm absolutely 100% convinced that it is, because I think the people that are staying on top of this and understanding that there's a plan in the distribution policy that they will create, and whether that, again, is incentivizing certain programs or how you want to distribute all of those resources that you now have, I think that this thing has, Nebraska's been forward thinking going all the way back to the collective part of it, that you understand that by having this new resource, there's more pressure on schools like Nebraska to take advantage of that, because this is a rich get richer system. Let's not pretend that it isn't. But Nebraska, fortunately, has done the right things with these new advantages in college athletics when it comes to being able to attract talent and being able to pay student athletes. So I think without question, this is a great thing for Nebraska, because as I mentioned earlier, if we're looking and starting with football and what that can mean, if you have success on the football field and how that can continue to attract and help you for other sports as well in talent acquisition, you are now in an era where it's going to be 16. We're at 12 right now. It's going to be 16 teams. They're going to be playing at the end of the year with a chance to win a college national championship. If you're Nebraska, this helps you get even closer to that group of 16, or even that group of 12, if there's a little bit of dragging the feet with that. But you're going into a different world of college football where you can pay. And the creativity that comes with that. We just saw an example, and I know it had nothing to do with the revenue share, but we saw an example of that creativity when it comes to talent acquisition and getting people on campus by Matt Rhule this last Friday in the Battle of the Boneyard. Yes. There are creative thinkers all throughout that football program, and I think all throughout that athletic department, that if you give Nebraska, schools like Nebraska that are trying to play catch up with the big dogs because they were once there, having this type of settlement and this type of money at your disposal, where you can use that in a, again, another creative way to sell your program and sell your facilities and all of that that comes with it, on top of, at the end of the day, all right, let's talk turkey. What kind of money can I be making here compared to Ohio State or compared to LSU? Okay, I'm glad you asked. Let's talk about that. And you can put up a competitive offer. I think schools like Nebraska, without question, ones that have the resources, have the built-in following, the fan bases that Nebraska has, but are in that position, almost purgatory, where they're trying to get back into that consistent, perennial top 25 conversation. Because in my opinion, Caleb, if you're in the top 25 come November 1st, you have a shot to make the college football playoff. That's not asking for too much, given the resources. I don't think this type of money all of a sudden makes Alabama that much more dangerous or makes Georgia that much more dangerous because they've already lived off of those riches. I think it's the teams like the Miamis, the Nebraskas of the world, the Florida States of the world, the teams that have had those eras of success and are trying to find it back consistently, but already still have the built-in infrastructure to support this type of influx of cash. So absolutely, I think it's good for Nebraska.
I think overall the NIL era has been good for for Nebraska in helping. And no, you maybe haven't seen the wins and losses. And I think some of that was more with the program itself when you're talking Nebraska football. But when you're looking at, Ohio State in the, $25 million roster. Yeah, there are some places that have done that. Texas Tech gets a national runner-up in softball because they found a way to get one of the best pitchers in the nation for $1 million NIL deal. Those things are still going to exist, and you're hearing how much Indiana men's basketball wants to spend this next year and all of those things. But in general, when you look at some of the teams that were in the college football playoff a year ago, some of the teams that were able to make a run in the NCAA tournament, you kind of see that year in and year out. But where we're at right now, and what's coming up this week in Omaha? Six conferences plus one independent. Mm-hmm. Only one league. The SEC has two teams there. No returning teams to the College World Series from last year for the first time since 1957. I don't know how much NIL has played a part in that. I don't know how much rev share will play a part in keeping the table balanced going forward. But from what I can see in the way Nebraska has operated financially and the leaders that have continued to operate in that way, I'm confident that the NIL era and now moving into the house settlement era is good for Nebraska and Nebraska athletics and also fully fund men's track and field and women's track and field. Just fully fund track and field, Troy. That's all I want out of this.
Well, I can see this, Caleb, to the point that we're talking about. It's almost like you're looking at who stands to benefit from this other than the obvious, other than your big time programs. Okay. And when I look at, let's just look at the Big Ten for a moment. Is this going to be a game changer for, say, Northwestern, Purdue, or Rutgers? I don't think so. I don't think all of a sudden, okay. Because I think you're going to be in the same situation that you have been where you're now that gap between the programs that you're trying to catch up with it becomes a little bit more increasingly bigger because you don't already have that built-in infrastructure, the fan bases, the facilities. Now, Northwest is going to have a gorgeous facility, but again, in the grand scheme of all of it, I just think of the programs that are going to stand to benefit from this. Now, of course, there's always going to be those marquee college football programs that I just mentioned, but the ones like a Nebraska, I'd say even a USC in there would be one to keep an eye on. Washington, if we're looking at some of the Big Ten schools right now, these are programs that have the donor money that come to the collective, that have good facilities, that have a strong fan base that will follow this. And as we now know, can also donate. Maybe they're not traditional donors, but can donate and help when it comes to that collective. And they have a market name. They have a brand name. To me, those in Nebraska's in this category. Those could potentially be the sleepers, the dangerous programs in this new revenue share era of college sports. Like I said, when you're at the top, like the Ohio States, the Georgias, the Alabamas, the Texases of the world, when it comes to spending, you can't go much higher. Okay. You can only put 105 people on a roster. At some point, there's going to be a lot. Well, not some point. It's happening. It's going on now. There's a lot more talent than just 105. So how do those schools, and I even mentioned the Florida States of the world, how do those schools take advantage of their past, of their current brand, and their current infrastructure of the actual give a damn that they still have, that these programs still have, and now use this new revenue stream to generate more talent acquisition? I think there are some dangerous schools out there that are lying in the weeds, and I really do think Nebraska could be one of them in this new era.
One school that we didn't mention that and I've thought of this since Friday evening, I think is potentially the biggest winner in all of this, is the University of Oregon. I don't know if it'll bring a national championship to football, but that is a program that walked into the Big Ten, won eight championships, yeah, eight Big Ten championships in their first year. And if that school decides to fully fund several of their sports, if not all of them, with the backing of Phil Knight and Nike, mm-hmm, they already have a pretty damn good track team. Mm-hmm. You know, they've had good baseball and softball programs out, yep, there. Basketball has done well for itself. Football, we saw what they did last year. Volleyball is going through a transition, but they'd made multiple NCAA tournaments before that. We'll see if they can bounce back. A lot of Oregon sports. That, to me, could be the monster on the hill that you're chasing.
Sure.
That could be the, oh no, here's where revenue, rev share, and NIL has created this Frankenstein that has all of the resources and all of that big brand bias to take advantage of it. Even without the football national championship, that is one where you're looking at as an entire athletic department,
yeah,
not just football. They definitely out there in Eugene look like a department that is set up for a lot of success with this.
They know how to attract student athletes there. And you mentioned all of those sports. Basketball had a Final Four within the last 10 years. Okay, so all those sports have had.
They had one. Their women's program had one of the best women's players ever with Sabrina, yes, Ionescu. Also,
absolutely. And so they've had the ability to attract some of the best student athletes in all of their sports. Now you throw this on top of it. I totally agree with you. And there is another example of a team. I wouldn't even consider Oregon a athletic department that's lying in the weeds right now because of a lot of the reasons you just pointed out too. But that's another one that could take a major step forward with all of their athletics. I mean, that's absolutely one of those programs. I was talking maybe some of the biggest winners when it comes to football, or some of the programs that are lying in the weeds a little bit that could really, yeah, benefit from this in football. And I think Nebraska is one of them. But to your point about Oregon and an entire athletic department, 100%. You add even more on top of what is a very healthy revenue stream for all those sports with the donor dollars and the Phil Knight effect. And just the coolness that still exists with Oregon. There's still something cool about Eugene, Oregon, and those colors and the multitude of uniforms that you get in every sport. Absolutely. They could be one of the elite programs, or at least one of the elite athletic departments with various success.
Oh, and a lot still to figure out, not just Oregon or USC, Washington, Indiana, but Nebraska and everywhere else across the country. How are those rev share dollars going to be utilized? How much is going to what sports? How many, if any, new scholarships are going to be created? This is the ultimate, you're like NCAA football dynasty. How are you going to use your recruiting hours each week? How many scholarships are you going to, how many quarterbacks are you going to recruit? It's doing this with a department, and like, I love it because I love the building aspect of these things. How is Nebraska going to tackle this? How is Troy Dannon going to lead Nebraska into this new era of collegiate athletics? We'll have to find out. And if there's ever any changes, any news, anything that comes out, we'll keep you updated at HuskerMax.com and right here on HuskerMax Today on the HuskerMax YouTube page. That is Nick Handley. I'm Caleb Henry. We'll be back a little bit later this week to talk about my project on the Nebraska football all quarter century team. You can find more of that at HuskerMax.com right now. Voting is live on the backfield, quarterback, and running back. So you can go check that out now. We'll talk more about that later this week. For Nick, I'm Caleb. That is HuskerMax Today. Go Big Red.